It is Thursday, February 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Mexico's president will meet two members of President Donald Trump's cabinet.
I think for Rex Tillerson, this really is mission impossible.
Tensions rise between Turkey and Iran, and we look at the Academy Award nominees for Best Original Song. It's all ahead. Two senior Trump administration officials, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and Homeland Security Secretary Jack Kelly, met Wednesday and Thursday with Guatemalan and Mexican officials, even as new U.S. guidelines were announced to crack down on illegal immigration. White House spokesman Sean Spicer insisted U.S.-Mexican relations remain positive.
We have a very healthy and robust relationship with the Mexican government and Mexican officials, and I think they would echo that same sentiment. President Peña Nieto has echoed that as well. But I think the relationship with Mexico is phenomenal right now. And I think there's an unbelievable and robust dialogue between our two nations.
He said the talks were aimed at improving the quality of lives for people on both sides of the border by combating drug traffickers and finding ways to improve economic relations. But Rice University Latin American analyst Mark Jones tells International Edition's Victor Beatty that's not how many Mexicans view the guidelines.
The goal of Tillerson's trip was to improve and soften and try to smooth over the friction that's occurred previously in U.S.-Mexico bilateral relations. But just before he goes, the Trump administration releases this new memorandum that is seen as an affront to Mexican dignity, that representing hostility towards Mexico and Mexicans, both in terms of deportations in the United States, as well as the new policy to take any Central American migrant who crosses over from Mexico and not, as it has been the case, return them to Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, but instead to just drop them on the Mexican side of the border in Reynosa, Juarez, and elsewhere. I think for Rex Tillerson, this really is mission impossible. Kelly's trip to Guatemala, if you think of it from more of a public relations trip in terms of signaling to Guatemalans not to migrate illegally to the United States, there may be something to it in the sense that his presence there will resonate among some Guatemalans who might reconsider a trip to the United States in terms of paying coyote or smuggler $5,000 to $10,000 for a trip that may end up being futile.
Can this matter be resolved and still maintain good cross-border relations between the U.S. and Mexico?
To the extent to which the wall is simply a metaphor for enhanced border security, where we may see some small sections of wall, but all that President Trump really does is enhance border security, that will have a negative impact, but not an overly negative impact. Where I think we could start treading into very dangerous ground is if the president does go through with actually building a wall and tries to make Mexico pay either directly through sending them a bill or indirectly through some type of tax on imports from Mexico, a tax on remittances, or a suspension of aid to Mexico. We have to start looking a little further down the pike about what this means for the future of U.S.-Mexico relations in regard to the 2018 Mexican presidential election. Because what we've seen is, since the election of President Trump in November, a very radical populist candidate on the left wing, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, has seen his stock rise. He's gone from being roughly third in the polls to first in the polls.
That's Mark Jones of Rice University. He said should tensions continue to rise and the anti-American López Obrador win the election in 2018, that could lead to chilly cross-border relations, which would be bad for both economies. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
Well, there's a video going around social media today from Anaheim, California, just outside of Los Angeles. And what is depicted in the video, there's a group of Hispanic teenagers and a man who is later identified as a off-duty Los Angeles Police Department officer. And he has this one teenager, a 13-year-old boy, and he's kind of grabbing him around the collar. Now, we don't know exactly what transpired prior to this, if there was an argument or whatnot, but this video picks up with him grabbing this boy around the collar. At one point in the video later on, the officer pulls out his gun and shoots one round, not at anyone in particular, perhaps to disperse everyone who was gathered there on what was apparently his lawn. But this video has gone viral now on social media, and thankfully no one was killed. But it's almost, many people are speculating, like one of these police shooting incidents that we've seen in the past, that they become kind of a flashpoint. In fact, this instance has already sparked protest in Anaheim. We see a lot of people talking about this incident on social media and using social media to organize. So this seems like this incident is only going to grow in the digital realm and could potentially snowball into something more serious and something that causes a lot more protest.
Yeah, particularly if there's a video involved.
Absolutely. And that's what we see a lot of these cases when there is a video involved. That is something that adds to and exacerbates some of these issues. The other thing we're seeing trending today is following President Trump's moving to rescind some Obama administration regulations on the use of bathrooms by transgender individuals. He's received a lot of support from the right for that, backlash from the left, and two tweets from someone named Jackie Evancho. Now, Jackie Evancho might be known to our listeners as the person who sang the national anthem at Donald Trump's inauguration. She also has a transgendered sister. So she tweeted at Donald Trump saying she was disappointed with his decision, and then she tweeted and said, "You give me the honor to sing at your inauguration. Please give me and my sister the honor to meet with you to talk about transgendered rights." So no word yet if Donald Trump's taken her up on that offer, but she's receiving a lot of attention for calling him out on this position.
Yeah, I was just wondering whether she's heard from the White House. But
not yet, but if she does, I'm sure it'll be on Twitter. That seems to be the medium of choice.
Absolutely. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. U.S.-backed Iraqi forces take control of Mosul's airport. The U.S. calls on China to alter its approach towards the South China Sea. Pakistan's government okays military cross-border operations against terrorists. And a top aide says President Trump is taking control of the U.S. conservative movement. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists using NASA's Spitzer Space Telescope have found the largest group of Earth-like planets circling a single star. A total of seven planets were observed orbiting TRAPPIST-1, a star located only about 40 light-years from Earth. The discovery also set a record for the number of planets that were found in the star's habitable zone. The habitable zone is an area surrounding a star where any orbiting planets could have liquid water on its surface. NASA's Thomas Serbukhin tells us why this discovery is significant.
The discovery gives us a hint that finding a second Earth is not just a matter of if, but when. Scientists believe, actually, that around every star there could be one planet. Take three, take five, take seven. And you can just imagine how many worlds are out there that have a shot to becoming a habitable ecosystem.
I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at how President Trump is working to please his core supporters. Tensions are on the rise between Turkey and Iran. As Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul, a growing war of words involving the country's diplomats has brought to the surface simmering rivalries bidding for influence across the region.
Turkish presidential spokesman Ibrahim Kalın sent a thinly veiled threat to Tehran in his weekly news conference.
Şimdi öncelikle şunu söyleyeyim, İran bizim önemli bir komşumuz.
He said Iran is an important neighbor and Turkey's always been in dialogue with Iran. But he said it does not mean Ankara will ignore Iran's efforts in penetrating the region. He was responding to comments by Ali Akbar Velayeti, a key advisor to the Iranian supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, who told Turkish soldiers to leave Iraq and Syria or the people would kick them out. Turkey's deployed soldiers in both countries to fight terrorism. Political consultant Attila Yeşalada of Global Source Partners says the diplomatic barbs have finally brought to the surface a worrying regional rivalry.
They are very serious. I mean, the competition between Iran and Turkey, everyone knows it. It's like two elephants in a small room. Iran clearly is an expansionist country. Their goal of building a Shia circle all the way from Tehran to Lebanon is no secret, at least from the Turkish perspective.
Experts say religious sectarianism underscores the tensions between the predominantly Shia Iran and mostly Sunni Turkey. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan likes to present himself as a protector of Sunni Muslim rights and has accused Tehran of pursuing a policy of religious sectarianism, a charge Tehran denies. Earlier this month, Erdogan accused a Tehran-backed Hezbollah movement of being a terrorist organization. Former senior Turkish diplomat Aydin Selcen says Ankara should temper its confrontational stance with an awareness of its capabilities.
What is our military strength? What is our foreign policy strength? What is our intelligence strength? And are we a regional power? Yes. But are we a global power? No. Are we a regional power which can have its way in all issues? No. We have to work with other regional powers like Iran.
Erdogan has been turning to other Sunni countries in the region for support. This month, he visited Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states for talks, observers say, focused on curtailing Iran's influence. Yeşalada says the increasingly assertive stance by Ankara could be influenced by the new US president, Donald Trump.
With Trump flexing his muscles against Tehran, Ankara may have sensed an opportunity to bring this antagonism into the open and to finally resolve the long-standing low-level conflict in Iraq and Syria space. That, of course, is also very costly. For one thing, we have a gas deal with Iran. We have great hopes of economic cooperation. And finally, of course, Iran is not a country that easily gives up on its strategic advantages and currently holds the upper hand in Iraq and Syria.
The repercussions for Ankara are not likely to be confined to trade, with Tehran being an expert in fighting proxy wars. Regional reports say Tehran is seeking to court Kurdish insurgent group, the PKK, and its affiliates across the region. Turkey, the United States, and the European Union consider the PKK a terrorist organization. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
In his first month in office, U.S. President Donald Trump has excited supporters and angered his critics, a continuation of last year's presidential election campaign that polarized the country. Trump is taking great care to make sure that his core supporters are pleased with the early weeks of his presidency, an approach that some analysts say could create problems down the line. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
The arrival of Air Force One thrills Trump supporters in Florida as the president holds his first campaign-style rally as commander-in-chief.
Thank you, everybody.
After a busy and at times chaotic first month in office, Trump was eager to reconnect with his political base.
This was a truly great movement, and I want to be here with you, and I will always be with you. I promise you that.
Trump supporter Gene Huber was called to the stage, eager to thank the president.
When President Trump, during their election, promised all these things that he was going to do for us. I knew he was going to do this for us.
Polls show Trump is a divisive figure, but his political base is happy, says Republican strategist John Feary.
His most ardent supporters are delighted with what Donald Trump's been doing because he's basically taking the status quo and throwing it on the ground and smashing it up.
Trump opponents have also been out in force, holding rallies across the country, including Florida.
His agenda has been divisive, amoral.
Trump's controversial start in office has fueled a spirited opposition, says analyst James Thurber.
That's another unintended consequence of his actions, is that he's mobilized people. And these organizations are gaining in numbers. New organizations are being created.
During a tour of the new National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, Trump pledged to work for unity.
And that's what it's going to be. We're going to bring this country together, maybe bring some of the world together.
Trump's desire to cater to his core supporters could be politically risky over time, says John Feary.
I think he is, in many ways, failing, though, in trying to expand that base. He's got to figure out, okay, how do I do things that can make the rest of the country comfortable in my leadership?
Trump's approval rating hovers around 40% in most polls, another indication that the president has work to do before he can broaden his base of support. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. When the Oscars are handed out Sunday in Hollywood, the Best Original Song category has two songs from La La Land competing against one another. As VOA's David Byrd reports, the category also features a song composed by Emmy, Tony, and Grammy winner Lin-Manuel Miranda and a poignant tribute penned by Sting.
City of stars, are you shining just for me? City of stars, there's so much that I can't see.
La La Land is up for a total of 14 Academy Awards on Sunday. The film has two chances of taking home the Best Original Song Award for City of Stars, sung by Ryan Gosling, and Emma Stone's showpiece, Audition, The Fools Who Dream.
Here's to the hearts that ache. Here's to the mess we make.
La La Land director Damien Chazelle, who is nominated for Best Director and Best Original Screenplay, says he always thought the movie would resonate with audiences.
It was a hard movie to get financed, you know, and there was always that question of who is the audience for it, but I've always thought that musicals at their heart are a populist medium and that it's about being in a theater with a big crowd, seeing people break in a song. I think that's what it's all about.
If the wind in my sail on the sea keeps me haunting me,
Grammy, Tony, and Emmy Award winner Lin-Manuel Miranda, whose musical Hamilton dominated last year's Tony Awards, is up for his song How Far I'll Go from the Disney animated film Moana. Miranda says the song hits on universal themes.
We all have that one thing. It's not necessarily a call to the sea. It's not necessarily I want to write songs, but it is, there's a voice inside all of us, and it talks to us whether we like it or not. And that's what that song's about. It's about being 16 and the distance and between you and your dreams seeming impossible, but listening to that voice anyway.
If he wins, Miranda will have an EGOT, an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony.
Would keep my place on the empty chair and somehow I'll be there, and somehow I'll be there.
Sting and J. Ralph are nominated for The Empty Chair from the documentary Jim, the James Foley Story. Foley, a photojournalist reporting on the Syrian civil war, was captured in 2012 and later beheaded by the Islamic State group in 2014. J. Ralph says that Sting came up with the song while sitting at his Thanksgiving dinner after seeing the film.
And he looked around the kitchen table and had this concept, if there was an empty chair, what would he, do for his family, if someone was missing, mm-hmm. and he would leave an empty chair. And that was his way in, and in less than 24 hours, he sent back the finished lyrics. And I said to him, you got to try to at least make this look hard, man. And he laughed. He said, well, when you find a way in, it's very easy.
The fifth nominee for Best Original Song is Can't Stop the Feeling from another animated film, Trolls. The hugely popular tune was written by Justin Timberlake, Max Martin, and Carl Johan Schuster, and performed by Timberlake and the film cast members, including Anna Kendrick. The Oscars will be handed out Sunday night in Hollywood. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops. Ooh, I can't take my eyes off of it. Moving so phenomenally.
And a lot of us are eagerly awaiting those Academy Awards coming up on Sunday. Well, now, nearly 90% of Americans say they constantly or often check their email, texts, and social media accounts, leading to increased stress. That's according to a report from the American Psychological Association. Those who said they check constantly showed, on average, higher stress levels than those who checked less often. Using a 10-point scale, there is little or no stress, and 10 is a great deal of stress. Well, I'm afraid I'm one of those who checks too much. Well, that's our show for today. Please look at our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
On the night of September 11, 2012, members of the Ansar al-Sharia terrorist group attacked two U.S. government facilities in Benghazi, Libya. Using machine guns, rocket-propelled grenades, and mortars, the militants targeted the U.S. Special Mission compound and a nearby annex in repeated assaults, killing four Americans, including the U.S. ambassador, wounding two more U.S. personnel, and three Libyan contract guards. Both facilities were destroyed. Rewards were offered, and an intensive search mounted for those responsible for the attack. On June 15th, U.S. military personnel arrested a key suspect in the operation, Ahmed Abu Katala, a senior leader of Ansar al-Sharia in Benghazi, has been charged with murder and other charges, and will be sent to the United States to stand trial. Others involved in the attack remain at large, and the United States will do whatever it takes to see that justice is done. Created after the fall of Libya's longtime ruler, Muammar Gaddafi, Ansar al-Sharia has been involved in many attacks in the region, targeting civilians and assassinating or attempting to assassinate security officials and political actors in eastern Libya. Its members continue to pose a threat to U.S. interests in Libya and have been designated as international terrorist organizations. Toward this end, the Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $10 million for information leading to the arrest or conviction of any individual responsible for the Benghazi attacks. The U.S. guarantees that all reports will be investigated and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential. If appropriate, the U.S. is prepared to protect informants by relocating them. If you have information on any of these individuals, contact the Regional Security Office at the nearest U.S. Embassy or the tip line at www.rewardsforjustice.net or email information to info@rewardsforjustice.net.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.